I think California spent maybe $40 billion in like the last 7 years to address the problem, and it only got worse.
California doubled down on the housing first.
Yes.
Harm reduction only.
Yeah, they got them off the streets and put them in housing, but then they didn't require sobriety. They allowed them to continue to use, but in that environment.
It was very destructive. Gangs ruled that housing. The buildings got torn up. It was ruined within 3 years. People were living in probably the worst human rights disaster. I think California has one half of the street homelessness in the country. Mm. And LA has one third of the street homelessness of the whole country.
So if you want to deal with homelessness, you're not going to do it without also addressing the problem of addiction.
Welcome to today's episode of Falling to Freedom, where addiction ends and faith begins. The weekly podcast that brings thoughtful, informed, and challenging discussions about addiction to the forefront of everyone's minds. We join our host now, Chad Lacombe, for today's topic.
All right. Well, good morning. We're excited for today's guest. In the past, we've highlighted the intersection between homelessness and addiction, which is the focus of our podcast and certainly our ministry, Fully Restored Ministries. And I can't think of a better person to talk about this intersection with than our guest today. Reverend Andy Bales was the CEO of Union Rescue Mission for about 20 years. A little bit of background on that, I was amazed. It started in 1891. So Union Rescue Mission's been there for almost 135 years, which is...
Yeah, some of my teammates used to tease me that I was on the original wagon, driving the wagon, but I would get them back and say, well, yeah, and I picked you up at the corner of 2nd and Main.
Exactly. I mean, anybody that lives in Southern California and has been to LA knows that it's a huge problem. I recently listened to a podcast you did with the current CEO. I think it was in September you did one, and he mentioned a number, 70,000. Is that accurate? 70,000 people on the streets in LA?
Yeah, 70,000 total, with 50,000 or so on the streets.
Okay.
And like 12,000 in the 53 square block area of Skid Row.
Do you know off the top of your head what the population of LA is?
LA city property proper is probably 3 million.
Okay.
But the local metro is over 10 million.
Wow. So it's a sizable population. But even with that large of a number, that's a good chunk of people that are on the streets.
Well, at least 10 times bigger than any other street population in the country.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think anybody, even if they don't live in Southern California or LA, just watching the news can see the pictures of the horror, that's unfolding on the streets in LA. But if we could just start, I wanted to ask you some personal questions, starting with, what motivated you those many years ago to focus on, this much needed area of ministry?
Well, actually, it was a failure of my own self to listen to scripture and to follow scripture. I was a school teacher at Des Moines Christian School. Okay. And I'd been a youth pastor and I'd been a pastor.
Mm-hmm.
But I was teaching some kids who I guess were poking fun at a classmate, calling them a loser. The person didn't dress quite as nice, wasn't quite as smart as they thought the person should be. And it just hit me that a child who came to the Des Moines Christian School couldn't find love even in a Christian classroom.
Mm.
So if you can't find love in a Christian classroom, where in this tough world are you going to find it? So I went home that night and studied my Bible. What could I share to change a kid's attitudes? And I came across Matthew 25 and verses 31 and following that says, at the end of time, Jesus and his angels are going to return, and he's going to gather the nations before him, and he's going to separate the sheep from the goats. And to the sheep, he's going to say, come, take your inheritance prepared for you since the creation of the world. For when I was hungry, you fed me. When I was thirsty, you gave me drink. When I was naked, you clothed me. When I was sick and in prison, you came to visit me. When I was a stranger, you welcomed me. And I translated that for the kids the next day, that I really feel like the way you treat another human being is the way that you're treating God himself. And theologians say I stretched it, but I said, I believe if you say a hurting word to an already hurting person, you're saying hurting words to God himself. In fact, I gave the illustration, the worst thing you could do to a parent is mistreat their kids. And the worst thing you can do to God is mistreat his kids. And I really let the kids have it. I locked the door. They couldn't escape me. I preached for nearly a whole class. And I did that six times. So six classes heard the message. I heard it six times. So I really should have got the message. But Friday night, I went to my other job because I have a lot of kids and I had to teach all week. And then I had to go to my other job on the weekend, about 38 hours on the weekend at a parking ramp. And I'm the guy sitting at the ticket booth taking your tickets and your money. And I wasn't working very hard. And it ended up, it was a Sunday after that Friday, and I was sitting at my booth and I'm watching NFL football on a mini screen and not working too hard, but a guy came up to the window and knocked on the window, and I looked up and he was missing his teeth and he had a long dirty beard and carrying a bag of soda pop cans. I could tell he was without a home, and he said, "Sir, can I have your sandwich?" And of course, after preaching a message six times about feeding someone who's hungry, I didn't think very well. And I said, "I'm sorry, sir, but I need my sandwich." And his face drooped with disappointment, and he disappeared around the corner into the darkness. And it just kind of hit me. Andy, you had a chance to practice what you preached, and you completely missed your chance. So I began hoping and praying for another chance and began to look for him. And a few weeks later, I found him on the street and fed him dinner. And then a few weeks after that, I didn't tell anybody about this embarrassing story of not following what I preached. And the missions pastor out of nowhere just comes up to me in the hallway and says, "There's a job downtown I think you should go apply for. That's the associate director of the Door Faith Mission. And I really think you should go apply." So I reluctantly went to the mission,
A
and I
little bit of
went,
Jonah syndrome.
yeah. And I went, and my dad had preached at missions, and I had sang, and I had previous experience, like at 13, singing and having a guy fall out of his chair, and then we go to supper, and it was a watery bowl of soup and a stale piece of bread, so. I had reasons for being reluctant, I guess, other than ego and thinking I would disappear and never be heard from again. But I walked in and the food was great. The guys were sober. The place was clean. And I thought, man, this is a chance to practice what I preached. And I found out why. I don't often tell this story, but I found out that the mission was established by a guy who spent 37 years on the streets, and he found it impossible to get sober in a non-sober environment, and so he made it a place that was sober. And then he said they'd go out and work and come back and not be fed well, so it was hard to go out and work. So he made the food extra good, and the guys could eat a big meal, go out and work, come back, get a meal, feel good about themselves. And he also asked them to pay part of their own way. So, something that I brought to Union Rescue Mission, and it took me a long time to implement, but the chance to have people pay part of their own way in recovery,
That is so
which,
important.
yeah, affirms their dignity and teaches responsibility and budget. So, all of those principles I learned from a guy who dropped out of third grade and spent 37 years on the streets. And that was the secret to my success of running a mission. But I had a chance to practice what I preached. Had some success in the Door of Faith Mission. Launched a new program for families in Des Moines called Good Samaritan Urban Ministries. And when I got a chance to go to California, I took it to go to a church to teach the church members how to reach out to their impoverished neighbors. But then the opportunity came up to go where things are the most difficult. Skid Row, it was notorious. A chance to go to the largest rescue mission in the country on Skid Row. And somehow, some way, God gave me the opportunity. And I was thinking this morning, the only reason I had any success was God and my teammates, my fabulous, wonderful teammates who made it all possible, welcomed my crazy ideas to never turn anybody away, to never turn a woman with a child away, to fill the gym if needed, just never. I even had a board member of the board chair. She agreed with me. She said, "We will never ever turn away a family with children." And so we ended up with 1,500 people on under our roof at one site, and then we built Hope Gardens Family Center and another 300 moms and kids and seniors, and then Angelo's House in South LA. We built a brand new $55 million, 74 apartments for families, and filled that. By the time I left, Union Rescue Mission was just flourishing, three different satellites, and we really did have a policy of never turning a family with children away, and we would never turn away a woman, and we rarely found a different place for men. We just made it work. We welcome people. And that's the one thing I can say that I'm really proud of is the how welcoming we were, how dignity affirming we were, and how we believed that people could recover and did recover. And I think at one point 25% of our staff were former guests who turned their life around and made a huge impact.
Well, you're a shining example of it's not how you start, but how you finish. You know,
Yeah,
that's great. I
and
mean, it's
sometimes
never,
failure is a great
no.
opportunity.
Well, that's a part of life. I mean, it's
Yeah.
just, it doesn't, I mean, speaking to anybody that maybe, you know, thinks they're not qualified or hasn't done a good job to this point, it's never too late to walk in what the Lord has for them and make a difference, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, and as I was going through the Union Rescue Mission website, I just noticed a lot of, you know, very cool things that align. We have a ministry called Fully Restored Ministries where, you know, our specific focus is addiction, you know, at least initially for men to come out of that, and just the emphasis on the need for spiritual renewal, realizing that people are spirit, body, and soul, right? And meeting all of those needs is a part of
Yeah.
that restoration process. You know, it can't just be one thing.
Yeah, and
Yeah.
people don't just get sober or quit using drugs. They need to be connected
Yeah.
with community and
Oh, yeah.
connected with a spiritual community.
Sure.
Our secret to success really was the peer group of men who were trying to get sober together and leaning on God for that strength. And the
Yeah.
same with our ladies, our moms at Hope Gardens, our ladies, they became such a tight-knit community who loved and supported each other. We just had to get out of the way and do whatever would bring them together in sobriety,
Yeah.
and the miracles happened.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, our guiding principle is as well, it's relationship, community, and purpose, you know,
Perfect.
instilling those things in people's lives. So, would you agree? Because we've done a few podcasts with others that are in, you know, that area of ministry. And it seems like from, you know, their testimony and what we can observe in our own personal testimony that probably close to 90% of long-term homelessness, there's some form of addiction that's involved. I mean, it's like you
Yeah.
can't separate the two. So if you want to deal with homelessness, which, many officials say they want to, and I think most good-hearted citizens want to help in that sphere. You're not going to do it without also addressing the problem of addiction. Would you agree with that?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And not just addiction, but the trauma
Yeah.
that comes with life on the streets,
Mm-hmm.
the horrendous treatment by society and other people who are homeless who abuse and take advantage. And I still get the opportunity to work with people. And every night at supper club, we have supper club here right behind me at 4 o'clock to five. Last night there was a couple tables full of people coming directly from the encampments, and I know what happens to, unfortunately, to people at encampments. And I can honestly say I'm haunted by the thought of anyone spending the night out on the street because I know the horrendous things that happen to especially women out on the street. And so it isn't wonderful that people escape into using drugs and alcohol, but it's kind of understandable because
Sure.
they're living in a little bit of a hell-like
Yeah.
environment, and they're trying to escape. Like
Absolutely.
we used to have people on Skid Row that would escape with something called spice that would send them into a seizure and black them out for 6 hours. And the reason they did was, hey, at least I escaped for 6 hours. I mean, what a way to escape. But people will try to escape a hell-like environment.
So let me kind of shift it towards just the problem at large, right? And especially in California and in LA, anyone that just takes a cursory look around sees that it's a problem. I think California spent maybe $40 billion in like the last 7 years to address the problem, and it only got worse. So obviously what they're doing with their housing first policies and whatever else they're doing isn't working, but you seem uniquely position to speak into that of what would be needed to, address this.
Yes, the same advice I gave in LA that they didn't necessarily want to hear, but they began to respond a little bit was to immediately get people the opportunity to get off the streets and not let the streets do any more damage. In fact, I just saw a quote from Mayor Bass the other day that said, "We are no longer following the policy of leaving people on the streets until we get housing ready. We are getting people immediately off the streets while we prepare housing." So they used to deny the need for shelter. They used to deny the need for recovery. They used to deny the need for transitional housing whatsoever. And now the mayor actually is using Union Rescue Mission's sprung structure that we built years ago for part of their Inside Safe program, which means they used to put people immediately in a hotel, and that was better than leaving people on the streets. But now they're actually utilizing Union Rescue Mission's recovery program as part of their Inside Safe, getting people immediately off the streets. Same thing I'm advising Des Moines right now. I'm trying to help create a place for 250 to 500 folks that are on the streets in Des Moines, trying to create a modular or sprung structure like or big barn like or whatever it takes to immediately help 250 to 500 people who want to come in off the streets and want to live a sober life. And then by getting off the streets and living that sober life, become productive again in the city, back to a job and productivity. It's going to be a huge rollout from Washington, hopefully. I say hopefully because we tried this once before while I was in Los Angeles and it didn't come about. So keeping my hopes up, but ready to get my heart broken once again. But I hope to be part of a movement that it does not tolerate leaving people on the streets. That we provide an immediate sanctuary to come in off the streets a place to be sober, much like I described George Holloway, his rules, you can't get sober unless you have a sober place. Well, California doubled down on the housing first, harm reduction only. That was the problem. Only they doubled down on funding of what they call harm reduction. I call free flow of alcohol and drugs. And it was very destructive. Gangs ruled that housing. The gangs were in charge. The buildings got torn up. There's a building that was ruined. It was built in 2021 for permanent supportive housing harm reduction, but it was ruined within 3 years. And that is the state of about 1,500 units on Skid Row. They've been demolished and they were in receivership when I left. No elevators weren't working, heating and air conditioning systems down. People were living in probably the worst human rights disaster. Skid Row as a whole is the worst human rights disaster in the U.S., but in particular, those 1,500 people abandoned in that permanent supportive housing harm reduction that went bad. It all went bad, but.
And would you say that, correct me if I'm mischaracterizing, but it was because not only, I mean, yeah, they got them off the streets and put them in housing, but then they didn't require sobriety. They allowed them to continue to use, but in that environment.
Right. They didn't even really offer a way to get sober, and they allowed people to do whatever they want to do. And I used to say a lot that if you allow 1,000 people to be crashing in any condition, you'll get 1,000 people crashing in any condition. But if you provide 1,000 beds for people to get on their feet and to get sober and go back to work, there'll be 1,000 people with taking you up on that opportunity. And again, it's not forced. I'm not going to force people off the streets. That's the job of the city and the police and everybody else. But what I hope to do is offer at least 500 beds where people can say, "Hey, I choose life again. I'm going to go in and get my life together and get back on my feet." That's what everybody I've ever met who's homeless has wanted to do.
I just recently had a guest on, and we were talking about harm reduction, and that policy. And I shared with them because that's, that is my past. I started using when I was very young, and it just destroyed my life. And I spent time on the streets as well. And I just was like, you know what? When I was in the midst of my addiction, if that would have been an option, I would have been all for that, to just stay in it. If you're gonna provide me a safe place and even pay for my drugs. But I know, looking back in hindsight, that was the worst thing that could have happened. I mean, I needed to get out of that. I needed change. And
And it's not just that the rule of not offering help. There's a rule in the harm reduction, and I can send it to anybody who dares to ask me. I can send you the actual instructions that you are not to intervene in any way in somebody's alcohol or drug use. That somehow, if you do, that's offending the rule of the law of harm reduction. And I have people who don't follow the harm reduction to the letter of the law, and they'll tell me about how they do interfere and things go well at their housing first harm reduction model. And I say that's because you aren't practicing the letter of the law. You are intervening and interfering, and it's working. And that's good news. But you're getting money that says you have to leave them alone in that area, and you're not following through with the promise of where the money came from.
Right. So it makes it seem like it's successful when it's not following, the
It's not
prescribed.
following the letter of the law because you are intervening in the alcohol and drug use.
Union Rescue Mission, definitely faith-based. I went on the website, looked at the statement of faith. I mean, it's all about, the motivation, being, Christian faith and wanting to help people, which there's a long history of good services that were started by the church,
Yeah.
hospitals, you know, orphanages,
We used to
even.
talk about that on Easter Sunday morning, the difference that has been made, right, since Christ died and rose again. The church has made a huge impact,
Oh,
not
yeah.
just through missions, but orphanages and hospitals and so much more.
Oh, absolutely. I have a great book on my shelf called Under the Influence, and it has really nothing to do with, you know, addiction or anything like that. It was just talking about the influence of the church on society. And you're right,
Right.
hospitals, even women's rights. I mean, all you have to do is go to a non-Christian country and see how women are treated,
Yeah.
to know that. But even our higher institutions, I don't, most people might
Yeah.
be, you know, a little bit surprised to know that Harvard,
Harvard,
Yale,
all those.
Princeton, they were all schools of ministry, you know. But, you know, as with the world, when something becomes profitable and they get their hands in it, then it no longer reflects what it originally was. So on that topic of faith, I think in that interview you did with Mark Hood, I heard mention that maybe there's a softening by the mayor towards faith-based programs. Is that accurate?
Yes, absolutely accurate. Before I left, when I was on the Lhasa Commission, she, and the Lhasa Commission is the city-county partnership to address homelessness, and she said we're going to try recovery, and we're going to even try faith-based recovery, and didn't happen while I was there, but soon after I left, they finally negotiated that part of Union Rescue Mission's campus, the Sprung structure, would be used for faith-based recovery for people for inside safe, immediately moving in off the streets into the Sprung structure. And they've had astounding success. I think at one point, 34 out of 34 people who'd come in had stayed. And up to that point, moving people into a hotel had about a 47% success rate. And so far at Union Rescue Mission, numbers could have changed by now, but they had a 100% success rate. The difference in the welcoming that Union Rescue Mission gave people, and the
Sure.
community, of course, that's there.
Right. And that kind of makes me want to mention something that is kind of a, I don't know, it's a point of contention for me, but the term evidence-based practices. Right.
Right.
So I was
I get
hoping you
that
could just stick.
here.
I was hoping you could explain that a little bit, because to me, it seems like a way of just discrediting faith-based programs. To me, it seems like a way
I
to just.
heard that. I heard that last week. They say that Housing First harm reduction, moving somebody in and surrounding them with services, has the best evidence of success. But what I experienced, what I saw, is I saw move people in, and the wraparound services never ever came, never ever showed up. It was a free flow of alcohol and drugs, and the clearest evidence is that California, the only state to double down on Housing First harm reduction alone, and it's important to say that homelessness has skyrocketed in California. It has. Street homelessness has skyrocketed. The state of California has like 171,000 people living on the streets. I think California has one half of the street homelessness in the country, and LA has one third of the
Of the
street
whole country.
homelessness of the whole country.
Oh my goodness.
And that's the evidence, right? That's the biggest evidence.
Sure.
And then often people cite one study in Boston that said the people in Housing First harm reduction in the long run pass away. Like I've heard it said they may move in their late 50s and die by 60, and they still think, well, hey, we provided them some dignity in their last years. Well, that's not the way I think. I want to see somebody have a chance at full recovery and a return to productivity and a return to community and hope.
So would I be correct in saying what they're talking about when they say evidence-based practices, they're talking about just outcomes. They're talking about numbers that you can point to, right or wrong, but they're talking about, the statistics on outcomes. Is that accurate?
Yes, that's accurate. And because they've done some, you can do a lot of things with numbers, but
Yes.
because they've kept track of numbers, they can say what they say. And that means Union Rescue Mission, other missions need to keep track of their outcomes. This many people went back to work. This many people went back to the streets. This many people reconnected with families and are living a good life. We need to do a better job of keeping track of our outcomes.
Right. And if they truly wanted to know, then it seems like it'd be an easy enough thing to test and put these different options for people and different ways of dealing with it side by side and look at it honestly and see
We
what
had,
is the most effective.
I don't know where that is right now, but we had plans within CityGate Network, the Association of Rescue Missions. It's what it used to be called. I wish it still was. We had a plan to keep track of all of the outcomes and then compare with housing first harm reduction and be able to prove that it's a way. I can tell you personally that I don't have hundreds of videos of people who turn their life around and are living a new life. I have thousands of videos. If you go to Union Rescue Mission Stories from Skid Row on YouTube, you will see thousands of videos of people telling their own story and saying, "My life turned around and I'm doing this now." So that's evidence as well.
Absolutely. And I mean, the reality is, when you're talking about a problem this big, even in addiction sphere, it takes money. It takes money to try and affect change. I mean, for facilities and for personnel, and I mean, for care, I mean, everything. It takes money. And it's like, if you truly wanted to fix the problem, why would you withhold resources from this whole segment of
That has great
people?
success.
Exactly. I mean, if
Yeah.
you, it, I mean, I don't know what conclusion to draw from that other than they're not really concerned with, results, but I'm hoping that things change because,
Things are going to change.
I mean, because like if I want to start a ministry that is basically just housing first and I want to just build some housing units and stuff, I mean, there's all kinds of federal and state money that I can go get. The minute I'm a faith-based, program that also wants to minister to the people's souls and the whole being, well, now I'm cut off from those resources, and
Well,
it's a huge disservice.
you can kind of understand why people who don't believe people can recover don't invest in recovery and don't invest in turnarounds and comebacks. But we, as people who do believe in comebacks through the power of God, we're going to invest everything we can
Well,
in
absolutely. I'm a
comebacks.
living example of that. I
Yeah,
mean, it's like, and so are so many other
especially you.
people. It's like, good Lord. The direction, obviously, that California is taking, is not working. What was the, so I think recently there was a bill, was it AB
Oh, yeah.
283 or something, and it included what you're talking about. It didn't make it exclusive.
And
It was still in the
it was
framework
still
of housing
offered.
first, but gave the option for recovery and people getting off that.
And it
And I
was
believe
overwhelmingly
veto.
approved and voted for,
And Newsom
and
vetoed
Governor
it, right?
Newsom vetoed it.
What was that? AB 293 or what was it? I might be misspeaking on that.
It's something like that, and it was recently vetoed, and I was really disappointed. And a lot of my recovery friends who've made a huge impact, they've helped San Francisco turn around and be much more about recovery. And it started a renewed recovery movement, not only in San Francisco, but Portland and Denver and other cities. There's a recovery movement making a comeback, and it's reached all the way to Washington. It's just whether Washington can pull it off.
Well, I hope that it seems this administration is certainly more open to understanding that faith-based stuff has to be a part of it, right? It doesn't.
Well, yeah. I just hope they don't focus on other things so much that it gets lost.
Yeah. And just to for the our listeners to understand, that you are a voice speaking from experience, you ran the largest mission in, I believe, the United States. Is it was it the
Yes.
largest mission in the United States for 20 years? So you know what you're talking about. This is from personal experience. If you were to guess, how many men, women, children, how many people would you say that have crossed your path in that ministry in the last 20 years? Tens of thousands?
Yeah, tens of thousands, perhaps even 60,000.
Wow. So this is a large number of people. So it's not like someone that was just, out one day talking to homeless people and, feels that they're an expert. I mean, you truly are an expert on what works and what doesn't, and seeing lives restored and hope restored.
And you know what worked the best? We are, I would say, are evidence-based.
Yeah.
Hope Gardens Family Center outside the city. We took our moms and kids to safety, living in the hills, beautiful camp-like condition, brook running through it. I think we experienced an 80% success rate. So 8 out of 10 moms were able to get sober, get in healthy relationships, stay out of not healthy relationships, get their kids in school, and find a career and move out on their own. That's what people need, a second chance.
Absolutely.
And all the while living in safety and gaining the skills they need to succeed in this complex, difficult society, especially in Southern California. And we had moms now that work at aerospace companies
Wow.
and are doing great. And they need the time, right? The time away to go to school, to be supported. That was the key.
Yeah. And what do you, I just wanted to ask you about that. So our program is minimum of 1 year, which for some people may seem like a long time, but it probably isn't that long at all when you're considering how long someone might have been in that lifestyle. These
Yeah,
short-term options are just not, they're not
I can
going to
tell
work.
you. Another key of Mayor Bass, she knows it takes more than 90 days.
Yeah.
I would say minimum of a year, but best 18 months. Our Hope Gardens Family Center was 2 to 3 years and fourth if you needed it, because we hoped our moms would start as a freshman in college and get a degree if that's what they were pursuing.
Sure.
So time and attention and safety are the keys to people doing well and breaking out of
Yeah.
old habits.
And addressing the whole person, right? Mind, body, spirit, all of
Oh.
these things. And one of the key things about our ministry, Fully Restored, is in that what we call a third phase for those that want, we teach them a vocational trade. We teach them
Yeah.
welding or machining or something like that and help them to learn something that's going to allow them to be, employable
Yes.
and support themselves. I did notice that there was that aspect to Union Rescue Mission for those that wanted it. Could you speak a little bit about that?
Yeah. So not only were people employed kind of in internships within the mission, but they actually became employed throughout the mission. Over the years, we developed partnerships with places like Toyota, places like PPP, Pittsburgh Paint, which painted the aerospace jets. I mean, whatever companies were willing to partner with us, we partnered with and helped. And as I left, we were given a huge farm by a benefactor, and there was talk of starting a driving school and big truck driving school, body shop. I don't know where they are with all of that, but
Sure.
vocational training is a huge part of people having the skills needed to live on their own in this world or live in community
And it gives
in
them the
this world.
dignity of work. I mean, it's like
Yeah.
people should be working. I mean, it's not a healthy thing
Yeah.
when you spend your whole life on free handouts. You're
Yeah, and
not.
that's what I had biggest criticism about Housing First, the promise of a unit for the rest of your life with no expectations or accountability. It's just not good for people to not have accountability or expectations. And they end up surviving more than thriving or living a fantastic life. And you really get nothing back to pay rent that will be paid in perpetuity, right? If you have a segment of people who are homeless actually coming back and paying their own way, that will drop the costs of serving people who are homeless immensely, because you won't just have a lot of people depending on tax dollars for the rest of their life. It just makes economic sense.
Well, yeah, that model you just said, where they have housing for life, that doesn't seem financially sustainable.
No, and that's exactly what Housing First harm reduction is. Building a, and they have very high expectations, like building a unit that's $1 million with granite countertops and expecting nothing back. And that formula just doesn't work.
Seems like a good deal for the builders.
It was a good deal for the builders, and the builders who paid off city councilmen, who I think there's four or five in prison now for taking bribes.
Wow.
It was good for all of the politicians and the builders and developers, but it was not good. And many of those are sitting empty now. It was not good for people who were devastated by homelessness. I had a better idea. I told the governor, with the money you poured in, and this is when he had hardly poured in any, like 12 billion or something, I said, you could have bought a 3-bedroom mobile home for every homeless person in the United States for what you spent on Housing First harm reduction. And people would have been living in very nice homes. It just was not a great thought out plan, and it was driven by builders and developers and politicians who got paid off.
Do they, I mean, you would be, in my mind, a likely choice to bring on to any kind of groups or councils, to discuss this. How often do they, solicit your opinion on this?
I had a few. I mean, I've been invited to a few places. They usually don't really like what I've had to say, because I don't know if it's too practical or doesn't reward enough people. But I mean, Des Moines has invited me recently to at least join in the conversation, and knowing what's coming from Washington, how to better prepare, because I think at this point, every continuum of care has to produce a way to get people in recovery and on their feet and back to work. And for instance, in Des Moines right now, it may drop to 30% can be permanent supportive housing. And right now, 82% of Des Moines' money goes to permanent supportive housing only. So
They're
we've got to
following in the
quit.
footsteps of California.
Yeah, much to my dismay, but they're open to doing something different, and we'll see what happens.
Well, I hope they listen to you. I mean, I wish more people would listen to you and get your opinion. I mean, if anyone is going to be able to speak into the situation, it's going to be people like you with a track record. So, and it's like, man, I think most Americans see the problem and it wrenches their heart. They don't want to see that. I mean, it's brutal to look at how people are living in the hopelessness and despair. And it's like they want to help, and those good intentions are often hijacked by, misguided policies. Just for the listeners, to anybody that may be looking at you and thinking, that you don't understand the hardships and you don't understand, the difficulties that people are going through. As I was looking at your story, I was amazed that people can't tell from this video, but you had both legs amputated because of medical conditions. And from what I understand, you had kidney failure and your wife gave you one of her kidneys. I mean, talk about the perfect match from God. I don't know how easy it is to match a kidney with a donor, but the fact that your wife was able to give you a kidney just blows me away. So you're no
We
stranger to
matched.
adversity.
We matched like as if she was my sister. Pretty wild. Don't know how that happened, but God does. But actually, lost my legs from flesh-eating disease. This will give you an idea about Skid Row. I lost my leg from flesh-eating disease, E. coli, staph, and strep from walking on the streets of Skid Row that had so much human waste on the streets. So our streets were covered with human waste. There weren't enough restrooms, and I was out delivering 2,000 bottles of water on the streets in a big old wagon, which we did if it was 85 degrees or hotter, because we wanted to keep people alive and long enough to come in. And I had a wound boot on, and my wound was almost healed, but somehow human waste snuck in, and my foot broke out in a bunch of blood blisters, and within days it was gaping wounds, and I got taken to the hospital with 104 temperature and gaping wounds and blood poisoning. And to save my life, they had to eventually remove my leg, and then eventually, after living on one leg, I wore out the other and had to lose it. So I'm in a wheelchair. Today I'm using my electric wheelchair because my hand quit working yesterday. I was wheeling around a bunch and somehow hurt my hand. But
Were the
so,
kidney complications from that as well?
no, it was dangerous for me to work on Skid Row because getting a kidney transplant, I have low immunity. You take pills to have low immunity, but I was able to return to Skid Row after my kidney transplant. But that was a question at the time. But actually, I've written some stuff that say, the wheelchair was an advantage at the mission.
Sure.
People used to think I was a police officer, and they'd say, "Hello, officer." But once you're in a wheelchair, nobody says, "Hello, officer." And people were much more at ease with a guy in a wheelchair. I could roll up to any situations, and nobody was ever threatened in any way. And it actually became like a secret
Strength.
weapon of being on the same level as people who are struggling, because all of us who are struggling kind of relate to each other.
Oh my gosh,
And
that's just like God's ways are so far above our ways, we can't even comprehend them. But I just want to just reiterate that just for our listeners, let that sink in. That you put your money where your mouth is. You were out there on the streets, to the point where you lost your legs for doing this work. And it infuriates me, these people that will never put their hand to anything, but from their ivory towers, we'll talk about. When the cameras are on, they're all about it. When the cameras are off, they're not. And, they're just not the real deal. They're not truly engaged. But, if there's any doubt in anybody's mind, you gave both your legs for this ministry and let that sink in.
yeah,
Well, so
thanks.
yeah, absolutely. Bless your heart. And so maybe we could just finish with you just sharing a little bit about what you're doing now there in Des Moines, Iowa.
Yes, I'm the executive director of CFUM, CFUM.org, but it's Children and Family Urban Movement. And not only do we get to work with kids before and after school, breakfast and supper, after school learning, and probably prevent a lot of homelessness because it starts early, that disconnection that happens. But we also get to invite people in for supper club every night, and many people, not only families and kids and others, but many people who are actually coming from nearby encampments who are homeless come in for supper. And so I get to hang out and try to connect those folks with assistance. And that's one of the things we recognize, is there isn't nearly enough places for people to go when they do want help. And so I'm going to hopefully work to create with a lot of help, create something in Des Moines that will add immediate shelter beds into the whole process, recovery beds into the whole process. Just met with the police and others yesterday about adding recovery and mental health beds to the formula, and who knows what I might be able to do if God shows up and works through his people.
Amen. Well, it's clear that, this is where your heart is. You know what you're called to, and it doesn't matter whether you're in California or Iowa or wherever. This is what you're going to do till your dying breath, I would imagine. So.
Yeah, and we're actually getting an opportunity to meet with Orange County people in
Oh,
California about the
good.
same idea, and we're meeting
Orange
with
County Rescue Mission?
we're talking to the former director of Orange County Rescue Mission, but
Jim Palmer.
yes, but
Okay.
we're actually working on Austin, Texas, and Orange County and Des Moines all at the same time, and I would probably have to say Des Moines is the one struggling the most to get going because I'm in charge of this area, but I hope we gain some momentum soon. And we'll know within a week or two what will hopefully be coming out of Washington.
Good. Well, I hope you'll keep us updated because I would very much be interested in knowing that as well. And then I can share that with our listeners when there's some revelation on that. Well, Andy, thank you so much for coming. I mean, it's truly an honor to talk with you, to be educated, and we're praying for the Lord's blessing upon all that you're doing there.
Thank you,
And
Chad.
yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Great to see you. Bye.
Good to see you. Bye.
Thank you for being a part of this much needed conversation as we expose the raw truths about addiction. Don't forget to like, follow, and most importantly, share. Remember, addiction is the dirty little secret that every family deals with, but nobody wants to talk about.